In old school games, life is cheap. Don't be a dope, bring your pull, hole, and rope. And try not to go
no.
down in a heap.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Down in a Heap podcast. I'm your host, Rob, podcasting to you live from beautiful Northeast Minneapolis. The top of the show there, you heard Taylor, the Whispering GM, from the Whispering GM podcast, formerly known as Clerics Wear Ringmail, but he's on his way to a hoedown and stopped by the side of the road and unloaded the truck on his way to Beverly Hills and sent me a bluegrass version. So thanks for that, Taylor. I appreciate it. Today, I'm going to be doing another little light RPG review, but a couple of quick notes here on some podcasts and stuff that I've discovered recently that I really have been enjoying so far. One that's been around apparently forever and I never ran across is a more of a history podcast called The Explorers, and as the name implies, takes some relatively deep dives into various voyages of discovery or exploratory expeditions throughout history and stuff. And that's pretty interesting and is the type of thing that I think would be a pretty cool adventure, going off into the unknown and not really having a goal so much of going to explore this dungeon or loot this forbidden temple. It's just actually going off the edge of the map and exploring it for some, either your own motives or maybe you're employed by some kind of guild or merchant empire or government, whatever. I think that could be pretty cool, either a naval expedition or an overland expedition. I think both could be very interesting, like little campaign ideas and stuff. The other is Podcast at Ground Zero, which is a dive into all things post-apocalyptic, movies, books, comic books, games. That's another relatively old podcast, but I've been thinking a lot more about post-apocalyptic kind of games and stuff. Whenever my Planetaris game folds up, I do kind of want to try and change things up a little bit. Maybe not, maybe it won't be like a really long campaign, but I would like to just step away from the classic medieval fantasy D&D-ish kind of game and try something new. And I think post-apoc is probably the most likely thing I'll do. And whether it's a more grounded post-apocalyptic or a wild and woolly mutant infested type of post-apocalyptic game, I'm not sure. Both of them have their appeals. And the game I'm going to be reviewing today is a more grounded post-apoc game. The last thing I'll mention is that Tim Shorts from Gothridge Manor and Joe the Lawyer are collaborating on a Monday night YouTube stream on both of their channels. They're doing a live stream. And they've been talking about some pretty interesting topics. Zines, they've created a adventure together, like a three-part series, but it's a pretty fun collaboration. I like listening to both of them, and together they're really good. So go check that out too, either at the Gothridge Manor YouTube site or Joe the Lawyer. I think it's like what is it? Something Man Cave. Well, if you just type in Joe the Lawyer, all one word, I'm sure it would pop up in YouTube, and Gothridge Manor definitely pops up because that's it. So, go check out those things. And before I get to my review today of The Big Wet Post-Diluvian RPG, I've got a call from Jason from Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Take it away, Jason.
Hey, Rob, Jason here. Just listening to your latest episode, you know, metacurrency's in the air. I recorded a recent episode with Gabe of Analytic Dice about metacurrency that's coming out next Wednesday. But after I recorded it, I saw that episode for Daniel and KR over at Monsters and Treasure where they're talking about metacurrency, and now you're talking about it, spurred by them, of course. But, yeah, lots to talk about metacurrency. I prefer metacurrency that's front-loaded, that gives you a better chance to succeed, but doesn't give you a re-roll personally. I talked about that a little bit in my episode with Gabe. But I think all the ideas you have there would work. I think they're a little more punishing than most of the systems out there, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, because it makes people think before they do it, right? But, yeah, I don't see any reason any of that stuff wouldn't work, especially I like the idea of tapping into your life force to heal somebody else if you don't roll well enough in the healing spell. I do like that. Uh-oh, dogs are barking, so I gotta go. Talk to you later.
I love that sign-off. Dogs are barking, gotta go. That should be, that should end every one of Jason's calls. Metacurrency definitely does seem like it's in the air, I guess. And I look forward to hearing your conversation about it on your podcast next week. So I agree. I'm more interested in metacurrency mechanics that are front-loaded, as you describe it, where you decide to use something before you roll the dice rather than clatter, clatter, oops, I blew it. I'm going to check off this Benny or this luck point or whatever and re-roll it. I do like it better when you decide you're going to expend something, a Benny before you make the roll rather than after it. But I guess that's just, most of the metacurrency kind of things are, I think, devices to make your characters either more survivable and or more super heroic. And I guess neither one of those things are of great interest to me. So I certainly understand why they are interesting to a lot of gamers. A lot of people do want to play like a larger-than-life, big-damn-hero kind of thing. And a lot of the metacurrency devices are there to enable you to be the big-damn-hero and stuff. But as I've stated many times before, that's not really the type of game or the type of character that I'm all that interested in playing. But, so I understand the things I'm suggesting are definitely more punishing as you describe it. And I don't even know if the people I play with would go for it. I do think it would be interesting, like if magical healing, like just messed up your metabolism and stuff and you actually aged because of it. We talk about playing these games all the time and characters not really aging or anything. There aren't many games that do that. I think Pendragon is the only one I can think of off the top of my head that has these like long-term kind of games where, I mean, long-term as in your character actually grows old and maybe has generations of characters that are playing in a campaign or something. But I do think it would be pretty interesting if every point of healing you got aged you a month. I mean, how many actual people would be willing to trade in their future for some rapid healing? You might not be quite as interested in getting into combat if that was the what you're sacrificing for for continuing on this expedition or dungeon delve or whatever, rather than just healing naturally or something. But yeah, it probably is too punishing for some. As far as sacrificing a level goes, yeah, that's pretty punishing too. But I like that better than the alternatives a lot of time of creating mechanics that just enable you to like, oh, well, yeah, I got knocked down to -6 hit points, but I made my death saves, so I'm still alive. I think it would be just more interesting if, oh, yeah, my third level character failed their save versus poison, but I'm going to sacrifice a level and say that, I was in a coma for an hour or something, but came back weakened and depleted, but I'm still kicking because I'm just one tough SOB, and it's not gonna kill me this time. But yeah, you gave up a level for that. You can continue on playing the character, but you're down a level, and that's better than rolling up a new character, right? And starting over at first level. So I don't know. I think it might be a pretty interesting way to deal with things. So, but thanks for calling, Jason. I appreciate it. And now we'll move on to our review for the day, for the week, until I do another review. Shake it. All right, the Big Wet post-diluvian RPG. This is something I ran across at my local game store, The Source. Occasionally they seem to bring in waves of little games like this, whether or not they're supporting like some Kickstarter at the retailer level, or they just make a purchase from some distributor, I don't know. But whenever I see these little zine games and stuff, I'm if it's at all interesting to me, I usually pick them up because A, I think they are really kind of interesting to see what some little independent, often one person show puts together. And B, I want to make these purchases to try and encourage The Source to continue bringing in this stuff. So yeah, so this one caught my eye. I think it was back last fall sometime I saw it, and it's a really visually striking zine. It is 20 pages long, saddle stitch digest size, with a really contrasting like block kind of layout in bold black and white. The cover is more like white on black, and in the interior it's more black on white. The imagery is really sets the stage for this post-diluvian setting, this apocalyptic setting that's been caused by just nonstop rain. So this thing is like dripping with atmosphere, pun intended. It is design Sam Sorensen, editing Nuclear Obelisk, publishing Exalted Funeral. Special thanks to Jarrett Crater and Matthew K. Typeface Korolev. Touchstones, Mothership, Metro, and Stalker. Theme song. I love this. I love when, or if people put like a song that is supposed to like evoke the feelings of the game. The theme song is My Children by Proto Martyr, and copyright 2021 Sam Sorensen. So the front page has a table of contents, which I think is, even in this little 20 page zine, I'll take a table of contents or a little index. Can never hurt. And there's a picture of three people in a rowboat with rain pouring down on them. This is a black and white line art drawing, almost, or more like white on black. One person at the oars with like a gas mask or scuba mask. They're all wearing rain gear. One person's got a, looks like a rifle or something that they're pointing off in the distance at something. So, you know, it says Touchstone's mothership. I know mothership exists and stuff, and I kind of have a feel for what it is, but I don't know how closely this system is inspired by mothership. And again, I'll make this claim. I have not played this game, so this review is based totally on just me flipping through it and thinking it's cool. And we had a little gap here where I was hoping to get some little rules light game to the table for a one-off or a multi-game kind of thing. But I ran out of... It was kind of a mutual thing. Adam is out of the country on a little vacation and stuff, so we're down to just three of us. And that's why we're not playing in one of our regular games. I was having a hard time getting motivated to to do a one-shot. I just don't really like them that much. Even though this would be, you know, the type of thing where we could give it a test drive and stuff. But me being the... I gotta get everything straight in my head before I run something. So trying to grasp the ramifications of this post-apocalyptic setting and stuff, and choosing a city or a location, and then trying to come up with a scenario that would be fun for just a one-off kind of thing. I just kind of psyched myself out, I guess. And then last minute, Keith couldn't make it anyway, so... Long story short, we didn't get it to the table yet. So the first page, when you turn it in, each page has a big letter block phrase going up the side of the page, which gives you what this page is about. So the character sheet has "One More Lost Soul" along the edge of the page. And it has a lot of times you can look at a character sheet and get a feel for what the game is like. And this one has little notes for basically giving you what you do to make up your character. So first, choose your character's name, roll a d10 for your history, then a d10 for your specialty, page 4.1. You have, it looks like, three stats, and then one stat that's kind of a negative indicator. There's brain, lungs, and nerves. And you roll 3d10 plus 25 for each of your stats, except wet, which is bad, page 3.2. Wet changes at the following rates based on conditions. Damp, dripping, drenched, or dry. Then it has a little picture of a person wearing some kind of diving mask or gas mask or something for wounds and injury. Notes, a little section for notes. An inventory slot going up to 20. And then roll D100 for a trinket, page 5.1, and record your starting gear. Everyone gets, and then has a list. Now choose three packages. And then there's little bullet points, with each bullet point having something. So you choose one of three of these bullet points. So everyone gets a melee weapon or tool, 2d10 bullets, three cans of food, 1 liter water bottle filled, a raincoat, rain boots, starting trinket. Now choose three packages: paddle board or life jacket, scuba mask, flippers, snorkel, 2 oxygen tanks. One of them's like a shotgun or a hunting rifle, any land vehicle with 10 liters of gas, a flashlight, you know, stuff like that. So big wet basics. And this is life after the flood. You are scavengers delving into the flooded ruins of an old dry world, hunting for artifacts and treasures left behind. When you attempt something with an uncertain outcome, roll D100 under a given stat. Brain is your knowledge, processing power, understanding, both the left and right brain. Lungs is your brawn, endurance, physical power, how long you can go before running out of steam. Nerves are reflexes, reaction time, fine manual control, sensitivity to sudden changes. Only roll when necessary. Many times problems can be solved using clever plans and the world around you. The dice should only come out when there is a genuine risk and uncertainty. All good advice. So this other stat, the wet, is you have a score called wet. To succeed on a check, you need to roll under the given stat, but never over, but over your wet score. So the wet is basically something that weighs down your soul. Wet is metaphorical as well as physical. It's as much a measure of a character's willingness to go on as it is their physical capacity to continue. But as you might guess, you gain wet by getting wet. So the more you're out in the cold or even submerged and stuff, you get more and more wet. For just damp, like wading or drizzle, you gain +1 per hour. Dripping, swimming, or in downright rain, you get +2 wet per hour. And drenched, diving, or in a downpour, you get +3 wet per hour. And if you get completely dry, you lose 3 wet per hour. You've got to be dry for the whole hour, else it doesn't work. Stagnant water can and will mess you up. So, yeah, that's kind of an interesting kind of thing where you... And in the combat system, too, it can add to your wet by getting wounded. So it's really kind of your fighting Elan as well as just your actual, like it says, your willingness to go on as well as your physical, like just soddenness. But this idea of rolling under a stat and over this negative indicator is kind of an interesting idea. I don't know, should we roll up a character?
Oh, let's shake it.
All right, so I'm making up a character. We'll just call him... Frank Jones. So Frank Jones, roll for your history. So dry lives long gone. Ancient histories, you roll a D10 to determine kind of a category: academia, arts, fringe, government, labor, medicine, professions, sciences, services, and trades. Frank Jones is from the sciences background, and then roll a D10 to see what kind of specialty in sciences he has. 8. Meteorologist. It's always raining here and cloudy, gloomy, wherever. So how does this come into play? If your history is relevant to a check, add +10 to the relevant stat. If your specialty is relevant, add 20 instead. So that's a pretty easy way to incorporate into a percentile game this. So let's see, for our stats, we roll 3d10 +25. I can just use a 20-sider. All right, so... Brain is 9, 12, so 37. And lungs is, much better, 18, 20, 45 for lungs. And nerves, not so good. 8 plus 25 is 33. So then everyone gets this, choose 3 packages. I think I'd go with the paddleboard. Boy, I don't know. There's a lot of really interesting things. I think you'd have to like collaborate with the other people playing and kind of to get a lot of different things. I'd choose a paddleboard, a shotgun, and bullets, I guess, probably. But I don't know, maybe the two-person tent is staying dry is pretty important. So, yeah, interesting choices to make, and I guess that's mainly what you want to have in a game, right? Then you roll on the trinkets table, the diver's trinkets. What still remains is a D100 table. So what does Frank Jones still have from his past? 87. A hard hat with expendable stenciled onto the side. Oh, beautiful. All right. So that's pretty fast character creation. Now, if you want to find out what the stuff that you have is like, it has, Stormy Supplies, Tools of the Trade, is an extensive 3-page listing of all the potential stuff you could have. Tools of the Trade, from lead to gold, hot lead to cold cash are the side headings. And this is pretty interesting because, so it lists the item, how many inventory slots it takes up, how many bullets it costs to get, or like in trade, bullets are the currency like they are in so many post-apocalyptic games. And then it has a waterproofing score. So gear has a proof rating to determine how resistant it is to water. If an object gets wet past its proof rating, it stops working. It breaks, dissipates, runs down, jams up, or something else. So 0 proof, any water, even just a splash, will cause damage. All the way up to 3 proof, the object can be completely submerged underwater and still function normally. So all these items are rated for that waterproofing. And then it has a brief description, like crowbar, common steel crowbar, useful in prying open doors, crates, etc. Dirt bike, meant for off-roading, seats 1, no armor, 15-liter tank, 15 kilometers per liter. So, yeah, this is pretty cool. And that's how quick character creation is.
All right, let's shake it.
All right, other stuff. There's a 2-page spread, like Dogs in the Mud and Sticks and Stones. And this covers, rain slick fights, sodden initiative, wet weapons, and armor and cover. When you get in a fight, roll D100 under your stat, but over your wet as normal. Use nerves for gunfights, lungs for melee. On a success, determine the severity and location of your attack using the chart below. So the severity, you look at the 10 score that you rolled, and the location is determined by the 1's score that you rolled on the percentiles. And the higher the success roll was, the more damaging the injury is. And likewise, the higher the 1 score, the more likely it is to be severely damaged. So it goes from grazed, punctured, ripped, shattered, and destroyed for severity to, and for location, legs, lower torso, arms, upper torso, head. On a 51+, the attacker chooses any result. So if you're successful on a 51+, you just decide, I destroyed the head, or I punctured, his hand or something and make him drop a weapon. I don't know. If you get hit, add wet equal to the unit's die or 10's die divided by 5, whichever is higher. So yeah, if you get hit, your wet score goes up, so you're less likely to be successful doing anything, really, which kind of mirrors being wounded. If the severity of the hit in the location would kill you, you die. You'll know when it happens, right? So if you shatter someone's head or destroy their head, they're dead. Wounds are physical, visceral. Apply their consequences realistically as they come up in game. Don't be abstract. Someone with a shattered shin can't walk. Someone with a ripped open shoulder can't swim. Impose disadvantages, bring in new problems, make life difficult. This is the advice given. All right, sodden. This is interesting, the initiative system. And again, I don't know if this is cribbed from something else or something that Sam Sorensen's come up with on his own, but this is pretty cool. If there's a question of who acts first, go down the list. If they're equal, go to the next option. So number 1, Aware is faster than surprised. If you see them first, you go first. 2, weapons drawn is faster than holstered. 3, standing still is faster than walking, is faster than running. Move slower, attack quicker. 4, smaller weapons are faster than large. Pistols, then shotguns, then rifles, knives, then axes. If all are equal, attack simultaneously. In melee, all melee weapons are faster than all guns. At range, all guns are faster than all melee weapons. So that's pretty interesting. And then different weapons provide different benefits. Like for an automatic weapon, fire any number of bullets, then roll that many units dice. So you can target different locations with the automatic weapon. For shotguns, roll 4 tens dice per shot fired. So that's gonna determine your success and or the likelihood of hitting someone because of the scatter from a shotgun. And so you're more likely to not only hit, but to get a more severe result. And as for long rifles, big weapons, explosives. For all guns, if you're firing at close range, roll tens dice with advantage. If you're firing at long range, roll tens dice with disadvantage instead. Medium range is a standard, unmodified roll. Armor and cover. Armor and cover are both determined by hit location, same as attacks. If you have head armor or head cover, attacks that would normally hit the head instead hit the armor or cover. Armor or cover have ratings, starting from 1 and going up. They absorb a number of hits equal to their rating, then break. So 1 armor is like leather jacket, athletic pads, plywood, plastic casing. 2 armor, bulletproof vest, motorcycle helmet, corrugated metal sheet, wooden door. 3 armor, riot gear, building wall, plexiglass, cinder block, concrete, and rebar. And 4 armor is foot-thick slab of concrete, reinforced steel door, armored vehicle exterior. So, yeah, that's interesting stuff. Rules of the road, rusted currency. In the flooded apocalypse, bullets are currency. Whether or not you decide to differentiate between all types of caliber weapons and stuff and keep track of bullets separately, that's always in these games, these kind of survivalist grounded post-apoc games, that's always kind of a question of how detailed you want to get and all that stuff. Soaking sacks. Inventory is based on slots. Items take up 1 or more slots. Sometimes multiple small items can fit into a single inventory slot. You have an inventory slots equal to lungs divided by 2 rounded up. When you need to fish something out of your backpack in a hurry, roll 2d10. If it's under the item's location in your inventory, immediately retrieve it. Otherwise, it takes 1 minute of searching to get it ready. This applies to weapons and ammo, so plan carefully. So, yeah, that's an... Some games do this with their inventory stuff, is you rank them by readiness, and that's a pretty interesting thing when you are doing these games that are kind of survival games. I think that can be pretty interesting to see how quickly you can retrieve some of these things, and you have to decide how you're going to organize things. So that's pretty much the game rules. And it's got a 2-page spread on generating our new flooded world, wastes and waters, and abandoned by Noah. After about five years goes, maybe 10 or 20, it started raining and didn't stop. Crops failed, coastlines burst, cities were abandoned, governments broke and retreated inland high into the mountains. Everything is always wet all the time. It suggests using this site, floodmap.net, to help build the broad strokes of your map. I recommend raising average global temperatures by about 4 degrees Celsius and correspondingly increasing sea levels by about 30 meters. So you can, and then pick your favorite coastal city and use that as the main setting of your game. So, and then it has what floodland hexes, if you're doing like a hex map, might be. Like if it's a sunken city or flooded city. Karst, Open Waters, Hot Zone. So, like, flooded city, average water depth of 0.25 to 2 meters. The streets are shallow rivers. Land travel speed is halved. It's a lot of wading and stomping. Shallow watercraft can travel. Larger ones will run aground. Lots of trash, clutter, detritus, ruins scattered everywhere. Minimal marine life. There's too many intact human structures. All right. Then it gives two-page spreads for adventures. One in a still-standing skyscraper, and the other in a aquarium. Then let's see, All That Glitters, it gives some like adventure seat ideas, pre-wet artifacts, artifact sites. So there are a couple D10 tables for what old world artifacts that scavengers might hunt. Upon return, each is worth 1d10,000 bullets. And artifact sites, flooded or submerged locations where artifacts may be found. Things like a weapons laboratory, a private yacht, offshore oil rig. Has a D100 table for a random search if you're picking the bones. And then the back table, hell and high water, the big wet weather. These days, the rain never truly stops. Every day, roll 3d10 exploding. It rains for that many hours. If there's more than 24 hours of rain, the overlapping hours are a downpour. And then additionally, use those 3d10s to determine wind, fog, and background radiation. And it has three D10 tables, respectively, for that. Quick note on radiation. Radiation is measured in grays. Geiger counters measure counts per minute. An object could be producing a huge amount of radiation, high GY, but from a great distance, the counts per minute will still be low. For our purposes, assume measurements are close to the source of a storm. This means almost everywhere is extremely radioactive. In a hot zone, however, it's possible to stay far away, and thus keep CPM counts low. So, you know, this would require, I think, a lot of thought, at least from someone like me who wants to try and hammer out all the details. I mean, I think you could create a quick little scenario like the ones given here and run a one shot fairly easily. The things I'll note are that there aren't really any stats given for, like, if you encountered a large predator, how would you stat out a bear or a wolf or a shark or something like that? I don't know. I mean, you could certainly come up with something and hit locations for animals and stuff are obviously, you know, a little bit difficult to figure out in games that do combat by hit location and stuff. If they're not just bipedal, it's a little bit different, but for quadrupeds and stuff, I guess you can just use arms rather than as the four legs and stuff. But yeah, there's no real suggestions for how you'd stat out something like that. There's not any kind of indication that there's mutants or anything supernatural going on in this kind of apocalyptic setting. There's no, at least rules as written, way for your characters to improve other than they're changing circumstances in the setting and acquiring more gear or like position in the society that they're in. So that might be a turnoff for some players. But overall, I think this is a pretty interesting game. It seems like it would flow fairly well. Creating adversaries, I guess you could just create like a baseline kind of mook character or survivor characters, NPC template or something, or you could generate them just like you generate player characters. But yeah, I think it would be pretty dangerous to get in too many gunfights, obviously. There's not really, other than recovering wet, there's not really any rules given for how you recover from a broken arm or a punctured lung or something like that. I guess you just, you know, apply real world realities to that. And then, I mean, there's probably not any kind of hospital facilities that are readily available. So all these things like no anesthesia and, or drugs, or, I mean, yeah, getting into a fight and trying to recover from your wounds could be really difficult, and infection and all that. So those are all the things that come up in these more grounded, realistic, quote-unquote, post-apocalyptic games. And I think just given the lethality involved, they're probably not going to lend themselves to at least long-term campaigns that have the same characters throughout. It's probably going to be a rotating cast of characters in the same setting if you wanted to do that. So this might lend itself more towards really short campaigns, or like a fill-in game that you do when one or two of your people can't make it that week and stuff. But I like it. I'd recommend it, especially for the price. You can get it at Exalted Funeral, the physical copy. Sam Sorensen has a itch page where you can get the PDF. In Exalted Funeral, it said it's an exclusive, so I'm guessing it's not available like on DriveThru or Lulu or something, but I didn't investigate there. So, but yeah, if this sounds interesting at all to you, if you're looking for it, it's one thing that caught my attention is this is just a different sort of apocalypse than I'd ever seen before. This post-diluvian apocalypse, rather than, you know, the typical ones you see. It's kind of a unique idea. And of course you could have other things like a viral kind of thing that happened, as well as just political meltdown and nuclear exchanges and stuff. And maybe some of those things led to this crazy weather. So you could combine a bunch of different things into this post-apocalyptic setting. But yeah, it could be a fun little game to try out. So that's my review. Thanks for listening. And until I talk to you again, don't go down in a heap. Questions, comments, suggestions for shows, email me at bigbalboni@gmail.com, or try to send it through the Spotify for Podcasters page for Down in a Heap, as long as they keep supporting it till June, I guess. All right, see you.